Here we have gathered side by side, circle of kinship, come and step inside. May all who seek here find a kindly word. May all who speak here feel they have been heard. Sing now together this, our heart's own song. Those are the words we just sang from our hymn. If you look in your hymnal, there's more information than you might have realized at first glance. At the bottom down here, it tells us that this tune is Old 124th, which in this case means it is from the 16th century, and it refers to Psalm 124. Now, oftentimes the words that we sing are different from the songs that might have been sung in, say, the 16th century. Words that were sung to this hymn, inspired by that psalm, were, "If God were not upon our side, when foes around us rage, were not himself our help and guide, when bitter war they wage, were he not Israel's mighty shield, to whom their utmost crafts must yield, we surely must have perished." So this is a different image of God than I imagine we hold. This image of God on some people's side, but not on others. And this image, for many people, does provide inspiration to deliver a saving message, to save people, to get them on the side with God. Now, we as Unitarian Universalists don't feel compelled to save anyone, but we do have a saving message. Our Universalist heritage assures us that we don't need to save souls because everyone is already and always held in love by that central loving force at the heart of all that is. God is not on anyone's side over anyone else. God is on everyone's side. Would most of you agree with this? Whatever your notion of the holy, a loving force, the possibility of justice, the creativity of nature, the mystery revealed by science, whatever your perception, conception of divine energy, would you agree that it's available to each and every one?
Yes.
Yes. And yet our hymn is about a circle of kinship with an invitation to step inside. It's not about God being upon our side, but there is something about this idea of a circle of kinship. It has an implication that there is this kind of circle, and it's determined who's inside it by who is kin. So there's just something about human nature that I think kind of has us want to define and close our circles. There's a variety of ways to define kinship: blood relatives, shared ethnic origins, shared employment or educational experiences, similar political perspectives, shared values, kindred spirits, familiarity and comfort with each other. And of course, it is natural that we feel affinity for some people more than others. And there are times when the comfort and ease that comes with that affinity has us choose to spend time with those people with whom we feel most comfortable. When we're planning a dinner party or a weekend trip or thinking about someone to call because we need a little time to relax and renew, it makes sense to put that as a priority. But as our hymn reminds us and the poet tells us and the gospel writer reports Jesus challenges us, we are called to open that circle, to welcome the stranger at our door, to invite the poor, the lame, the blind to our table. So there are times when our commitment to inclusion, to equity, and to learning outweighs our desire for comfort and ease. As Unitarian Universalists, we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of each person, and we seek justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. We are committed to the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. So our principles call us to greater inclusion as we welcome those who may not easily find welcome elsewhere in their lives. It is important that we are here to provide a welcome, especially to people who have not felt welcome in other places, particularly other religious bodies. Many people come here because they were dismissed or ostracized at some point in their life from a more orthodox religious body, where their questions were not welcome. And they are grateful to find this community where questions are encouraged. Wisdom from varied sources is honored, and exploring new ideas is one of our central practices. We know that some people come here because of their sexual orientation or the fact that their family is different from a traditional nuclear family. Some come simply because they're new to town and are looking for community. Some come who are hurting and are seeking an oasis and sanctuary for healing. We're all here together, however we got here, in this unlikely and beautiful mix of people, most of whom you would not know if you didn't share this fellowship experience. So here we are all together, and some of us are loud and messy and sticky, especially those young people. They can be very sticky. And some of us move slowly in body or mind and need some extra time to reach our destination. Some of us use sign language to communicate. Some of us believe in God, some of us do not. Some of us trust spirit guides. Some of us trust meteorologists. Some of us trust both. Some of us rely on homeopathic medicine. Some of us rely on flu shots. Some of us are Democrats. Some of us are Republicans. Some of us have PhDs. Some of us did not graduate from high school. Some have a Buddhist meditation practice. Some pray every night. Some of us read a psalm when we are frightened. Some of us take a walk in the woods every week of the year. Some read the journal Nature with wonder. Some listen to classical music. Some beat taiko drums. Some of us are American citizens. Some of us are not. Some of us are old. Some of us are young. Some of us are somewhere in between. Isn't it funny how old is always like 5 years older than you are? And yet all of us who have chosen to become members, do so because we resonate with Unitarian Universalist principles and values. We are seeking an oasis from a culture that can be alienating, confusing, chaotic, and damaging. We dream of joining together to make a difference in the world. And we think of this as our spiritual home, our congregation, our church. And that feeling is wonderful and to be celebrated. But I need to tell you that on some level it's inaccurate. This fellowship does not belong to us. We discovered it. If we are members, we have pledged to support it, but it's not ours. It doesn't even belong to Arthur, the founder in whose living room this fellowship started. It belongs to the mission of liberal religion. There is a liberal religious tradition that we are part of, that we are in the flow of. We are not here to serve 175 individual agendas, but to contribute our part to this fellowship's vision to be an open community, practicing compassion, nurturing spirit, living justice, and protecting the earth. So there is something special here, and we are grateful to have found it. The Reverend Teresa Cooley was the district executive in the Mass Bay District, and she is now in charge of all district services in Boston. But she talks about Unitarian Universalism as being unique because we have a balance between I, we, and a larger vision. So each individual is important. The I matters. We come here to find ourselves, to bring our whole selves, not hide any part of who we are, and be challenged to grow as an individual person. We also come here for the we. We come here to connect with others, realizing that we are formed by others, that it matters who we connect with, who we care about, who we are willing to be changed by being part of a community. And that we come together to serve a larger vision so that we as individuals and as a community have a purpose, that we have a vision for what the world could be and we want to contribute to create that vision to become a reality. This is compelling. It's something to be grateful for and it's something to share. And we are sharing it. We welcomed, I think it was 12 new members today. And in our welcoming ritual, our President Erica asked, have we prepared a place in this house and in our hearts and minds to embrace our newest members? And do we understand that each time a new member joins us, we reconstitute, change, and grow as a congregation? And if you chose to read the pledge, you affirmed that you were willing to share what you have found and nurtured here, and that you look forward to the transformations which these new members will make in you. Now, it is my hope that we'll be welcoming to new members, to first-time visitors, and to people who keep showing up again and again. It's clearly of benefit to these new people to feel welcomed, to feel affirmed in this environment that might still feel new and unfamiliar. But sometimes we forget that it's also of benefit to us, the people doing the welcoming. The Reverend Peter Morales, who is our current president, became kind of famous in our movement for the welcoming and growth that he created in the Golden Colorado congregation. And he spoke about it there, that welcoming is a spiritual practice that changes the person who does the welcoming. So we think that we're doing this maybe for the other person, the new person, or for the benefit of the congregation. But really, we benefit. If we're willing to genuinely encounter another person, it changes us. And it makes this congregation feel different because there's a vitality to it. It's a transformational practice. We feel more whole, more alive, as we live in a way that is always open to how we might be changed by that new face that we haven't seen before, or that face that we've seen but have never really spoken with before. So this sense of transformation and feeling alive, I'm hoping that it sounds compelling to you, but I also realize it might sound intimidating or anxiety-provoking or even frightening, because change, even positive change, is stressful. So I'm guessing that some of you may have experienced some minor feelings of discomfort this morning. You heard a reading from Christian scripture in English and Spanish. You saw me using sign language in the children's story. You didn't experience the joys and sorrows candle lighting ritual that we normally do. You welcomed new people into membership in this fellowship. You can probably look around and see some faces that are new to you. I'm preaching from a different location. You were probably invited to sit somewhere new this morning. Did that happen? Some of you accepted that invitation, and some of you didn't. Whichever choice you made, notice how it feels. Whether you moved or stayed in a familiar spot, you're probably sitting near someone different than you normally sit next to. Just like we don't own this church, you don't actually own your seat in the pews either. Now, it hasn't always been this way. In some New England churches, still today, there are these things called box pews, where there's actually this little door that you open and then you step inside and you're in your pew. And people, essentially families, bought those pews or rented those pews. With your donation, you know, that got to be your pew with your name on it. And that's not how we do it. Here in Carlisle, Massachusetts, which is right next to Concord, if any of you all know, outside of Boston, they erected a new building in 1811 after their first building had burned. And the way that they built it was consciously having a second-story balcony and then a center part. and the right rear corner of the balcony was designated for people of color. So in these days, there was a division of people by category. The propertied members of the church entered the center doors and got to sit in their pews, and unmarried people and non-propertied workers and people of color entered the side doors, walked up some steep stairs to sit in their places in the gallery. The Reverend Diane Carlson serves this church now, and they're in that same building from the 1800s. But they've redesigned things a bit, and the upper part, that balcony part, is now the whole sanctuary, and the lower part is more of a social hall. Those side doors were closed, so now everyone enters the main doors, and they're all in the balcony. So those old divisions no longer exist. We heard that Jesus advised his students to give a banquet and invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and promised that they would be blessed by doing so. Now, in the many stories of Jesus, he is often portrayed around a table, eating with all kinds of folks, and this is in part the revolution of his ministry. He ate with the wealthy and the powerful, with the learned Pharisees, with the tax collectors who were collaborating with occupying Romans, and with the poor and the outcast. Christine Pohl writes that in the Gospels, Jesus is present as gracious host and needy guest. He welcomes the outcast, and he depends on the welcome of ordinary folk. In his table fellowship, he challenges cultural assumptions about who is welcome in the community and in the kingdom. When we expand who is included at the table, we are blessed. We benefit from more voices, different perspectives among us. By inviting, including, and engaging more people of different ages, different backgrounds, different abilities, we become fuller people. We can recognize a broader circle of kinship. And this all sounds really good, doesn't it? Of course, this is what we want to do, but in practice, it's not easy. I notice that I tend to get inside a circle, and then I want to close it behind me. Once I feel kind of comfortable and settled, I remember a group of women who gathered in Boston fairly regularly at a friend's home, and then there was a new woman. Did I open my heart and welcome the opportunity to get to know her? No. I resented her being there, upsetting our special connection. And of course, you can imagine the end of this story is that as I got to know her, I really came to appreciate her quiet wisdom, her unique perspective, and her supportive friendship. And now, of course, that circle of friends feels incomplete without her. And when I went to a little going away party at this same friend's house, and there were strangers there, and I said to them, "Oh, it's so nice to meet you." I did not think it was nice to meet them. I thought, "Who are you doing? What are you doing here? This is my going away party." So it still happens, and those people turned out to be fascinating. And I'm sure if I still lived in New England, we would be friends. So there's just something in our makeup that has it a little bit hard to do this. And yet we gather here affirming our Unitarian Universalist principles so we can notice when we're out of alignment with those principles and recognize that as a call to come back into alignment. We can learn this lesson again and again. Remember the times in your life when you have been so richly blessed by a new person. Because, of course, resisting change is futile. Change is the nature of reality, and resisting that will just sap our energy. But if we let things happen naturally, if we let the vitality and the flow that comes with new people enliven us, transform us, then it can release more energy rather than sapping our energy as we try to hold on to things as it's always been. We're called to develop skills that we might think of as holy curiosity, realizing that everyone we encounter has something new to offer us, that there is something for us to learn. This can energize us, whether we're new members or longtime members. Mech Groot is not a Unitarian Universalist, but works in our Mass Bay District office. And she says that we often talk about our faith. And she wondered what we meant by that. And she's come to realize that one of the things it means is that we have faith that whoever shows up has a place, has a role, has gifts to offer. That, in fact, together we will discover things that are more life-affirming, that we can grow into something together that we could never do without the new person. In our song from the choir, we heard that each of us can find each other's light. We need each other. We can notice the discomfort and be willing to bear it. We can stretch to accommodate people with different needs. We can remember that we are called to widen our circle, to receive the blessings that flow from the new connections. So look around this circle, this fellowship. Go ahead, actually do it. And I'm guessing that you'll see faces that you know, and you can remember shared experiences and the gifts that you have come to recognize by knowing that person. And you'll see faces that you don't know. And you can call forward that holy curiosity. For what gift does this person have to offer me, to offer this community? May we honor this circle and make it ever wider to embrace all who come to join us here. May it be so. And now we will join.